Welcome to the Millionaire Chalk Show, Charles Oglesby, also known as Real Talk with Todd Billy. And we have the only other person who's been on this show as many, almost as many times as Dre. She's been on the second most times as Drake, which is really cool. I'm sure you guys know who she is, but the reason why I wanted to get her is because last time she just brought that fire and she just has a spark about her. And people were like on the edge of their seat when she was talking. And so I was like, I know whatever we talk about, she's going to bring that fire. So welcome back.
Thank you. I feel like your community is like my second family at this point. Like, y'all should know me by now.
So last time we had you on a show was maybe about a year ago.
Yeah.
What's changed since then?
So much has changed since the last time we've been here. I feel like, you know, my business has shifted in such a good way. I'm so locked in right now. You know, you get that feeling when you're just in flow and you know the projects that you want to take on. You know the things that work for you. And right now I have moved into a space where I wanted to focus on not just that people are taking control of their finances, but how they're going about it. Because what I see is that people try, but they're failing at it because they don't know how to approach it. So my newest project that I'm working on is actually called the Budget Style Quiz. And it helps people identify what their budget style is, because I'm like, we got to stop lying to ourselves. Like, if you know you're not going to give up the Starbucks, stop pretending like you're going to give up the Starbucks, because that isn't going to work for you. Or if you know you about to buy the Beyonce tickets when they drop, just be honest with yourself that that's what you're going to do. And so when you identify, like, everybody has their financial story, and that financial story has led to a mindset and a way of being. And you're not going to be able to outrun that development. And so what you really want to do is figure out how can you embrace it and use it to your advantage and create a plan for you to reach your financial goals anyway. Because the way everybody else is doing it is not going to work for you. So that's what I've been working on.
So I'm curious, because Dave Ramsey said, I got to do all these different things. And he made it seem like if I don't do it Dave Ramsey's way, I can't win. But you're saying it's a way to do it your way.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't make you kind of like compromise who you are almost and still accomplish your goals. How do you do that?
Oh, you get it. Like, that's exactly what it is, that you don't have to fit into this budget box or into somebody else's financial box or into their, you know, five-step plan. You don't have to do that. What you really have to do is be honest about who you are and about what you want and what you're willing to do to get what you want, and be honest about what you're not willing to do. So if you're not going to give up the Starbucks, then what are you going to do? And so that's really what it's about, is not listening to what everybody else is saying, but getting your priorities in order according to the way that your brain works, according to your personality and to your lifestyle. And once you put all of those pieces together, I call those the financial triad. When you put those pieces together, then you'll start to create a financial plan that works for you.
Interesting. So it's a lot of things going on in the news right now. Since you're a regular guest, I like to just have a conversation. And the first question I'm going to ask you is, what are your thoughts on the Kanye situation?
On the Kanye situation. So what aspect specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I guess whether you think his comments were and truly like anti-Semitic, and also just like the whole backlash that he's facing.
Yeah. So I'm not going to pretend like I be watching what Kanye say. So what I've heard about the matter is that he was saying that there are Jewish people who control a lot of things. And saying that he was, what did he say about that?
Basically just saying, like, they control the black voice.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Nick Cannon had said it before him and backtracked. And I think that's so interesting, because I decided a long time ago that other people's money would never be able to control me. I'd rather live under somebody's bridge than have other people's money control me. That's why I left corporate America in the first place, because they wanted to tell me who I was and who I wasn't and what I was good at and what I wasn't good at. And I was like, you don't know me. And so that's why I left, because I never felt like I could be at home in who I was. And I think that for better or worse, you have to be willing to bring your own ideas to the table, whatever they may be, mm-hmm. and then stand 10 toes down on that shit. Yeah. Like, you have to be willing to do that. And so there's been a lot of conversation, or I think we should actually have, what's interesting is that none of this stuff is verifiable. Mm-hmm. So if we really want to get into it, we should really stop. It's not a matter of what I think. We could just look at who's in control of these entities and then go from there. Yeah. But to have a backlash that's rooted in an emotion, right, that you can't say what you think, that's what I think the real problem is. We should just start looking at, okay, what is he talking about, and address what he's actually talking about.
I feel like Kanye doesn't have the right to say anything anymore. Like, anything he says, people are going to get upset about. And so it's tough to be in that position. And I think it's because when you become so massive, people kind of are looking for reasons to disagree with you so they can get mad, so they can feel like they're better than you, because my opinions are better than him. He might have $1 billion, but my opinions are better than his, and he's wrong, so therefore he's not better than me.
Really, I think that what I really think has happened is that we don't have a lot to do other than police other people. So we police each other, right? But Kanye is actually critiquing people where it matters. Mm. That's the actual thing that we should be looking at. Whether or not I agree with him is actually irrelevant. What I really want to know is, who are the people in power and how are they impacting my life? Kanye's opinion doesn't impact me at the end of the day. What actually does impact me is who is in power of the media. And how are they disseminating and controlling what I hear and what I see? Mm-hmm. That's actually something that is going to impact me. Yeah. Whether or not, you know, Kanye or Kyrie has an opinion about something doesn't impact me the same way.
That's true.
So we be looking at, you know,
it's
Susie.
Bigger, it's bigger than Ye.
Yeah. And then we put our focus on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And then we want to say, oh, we can focus on both things at the same time. No, you can't.
You can't.
No, you can't. And what we really need to be talking about is, who is in power and what are they doing and how is it impacting us?
100%. That is so right. I love it. Man, I had a thought that was going to stem off of that, but you kind of took me the other way. No, but I think that's really important, because if you think about it, a lot of people are mad at Kanye and calling him names. And then what he said came true immediately afterwards with the whole Kyrie Irving situation. And so, like you were saying, we have to look at who's in power. And so Kanye says, hey, look, they're in power and they're doing this to us. And then Kyrie Irving comes along and they pick something that really people probably forgot about, had no even remembrance of, and they ruined his whole life over it because they had the power to ruin his whole life. And so I think the important thing isn't, like, is this comment angry or mean to somebody else? It's like, are there people out there who have the ability to ruin your whole life? And I realized that. Like, I realized that there's people who had the ability to tell me how much money I can earn. There are people who had the ability to therefore tell me where I could live and what I can drive and whether my wife can work or not, or all these different decisions that they allowed to make for me, but it was under the guise of, we pay you a salary or we don't pay you a salary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
Not whether somebody's offended.
Exactly. And I would change that narrative and say that nobody has the power to ruin Kyrie's life. They had the power to determine whether or not they wanted to pay him. Mm. And that is a completely different thing, because at the end of the day, that's why I'm unemployable, because truly it is F your money to me. Yeah. And if I were Kyrie, they would never hear from me again.
Right.
And so he has access to community.
Yeah.
And he's going to have people who agree with him and people who don't agree with him. And, you know, sometimes I think we get so caught up in understanding the truth and understanding the facts.
Yeah.
And I never lay claim to facts or truth like I know what I know what I know, because I understand that we can't even trust the history that's given to us in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's understandable that people go out and look for their own knowledge, mm-hmm. and their own truth, because it's so hard to get to the truth of the matter, mm-hmm. when people are hiding your history from you.
Mm-hmm.
So if he has stumbled upon a truth that isn't true, or or is, I don't know. But what I do know is that he is entitled to it and that he will find a community that he can continue to thrive with. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is it's really about.
Yeah.
And that when we act as a silo, we're going to lose. If you're by yourself, you're going to lose. When you have leverage and when you have community, that's when you don't have to worry about who's paying you because you're going to have access to another community who can help you monetize your gifts as well.
Right, right, right. It's funny because, like, when you were saying that about Kanye, it made me realize that, like, if being a billionaire means you have to compromise yourself and silence yourself in the way, or even condemn your own in the way that a lot of the people are, it's like, maybe I don't want to be a billionaire.
Oh, I don't want it. I don't want it, absolutely. And if I do want it, if I did want it, I would make sure I'm not the only billionaire in my circle, right? Because if I'm not, if I'm the only one that's a billionaire, and that's what happens with a lot of black movements, you have one leader. And when you take out the one leader,
the movement dies.
The movement is dead. You have to create a network of leadership so that if one of us is off the map, that's okay because all of us have access to something and we're putting each other on and keeping each other in place.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of billion too. It's like, just like you said that you don't want your money to be tied, like you don't want anybody else in control of your money. It's like the billion isn't either it comes from Adidas or you don't get it.
Yeah.
It's like maybe there's another way to get your billion.
Exactly.
Maybe there's a way to get even more than a billion, but you can do it on your terms with you dictating things. And I think that's where Kanye's kind of getting to because he's gradually getting more and more control over what he has. So in the beginning with Nike, he had no control. He went to Adidas, he had more control, but not enough control. And so now I think that he's leaving Adidas not because he wants to shoot himself in the foot, but because he's like, no, like there's a bigger plan at play. And if I have to sacrifice this immediate, this current success to get to the bigger play, that's what I'm going to do. But at the end of the day, I'll have more control and I'll be dictating the terms. And even if he doesn't become a billionaire, he still has control. It's like, that's one of the things. It's like, I'd rather make less money doing, and I don't make less money now, but I'd rather, if I was making less money, but I still had, like, the ability to stay home and play golf and be with her with my son and all that stuff, it'll be worth it than for me to go into an environment where I can't be myself.
You really hit it on the head for me because as you're talking, I'm thinking about, like, what's really important in this conversation? Like, we're talking about Kanye and his ability to make a billion and what really matters in all of that. And I think it's really what you just said. So... Has Kanye said and done things that are worthy of critique? I absolutely believe so. But when I'm really thinking about what's important for me, it's like, am I happy? And am I doing, am I, you know, it's never about the money for me. I'm going to make the money regardless. Mm-hmm. Nobody going to stop my bag. That's just, but what it's like, do I get to be genuinely happy? And am I making sure that I'm bringing people with me? If my only goal is to make money and I don't care about anything else, then I really lost sight of what's important. And that's why you can be taken off the map like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I watched Floyd Mayweather come and say, really support Kyrie. And, you know, Floyd has, he has a whole entourage, right? He has a whole community of people who support him. And I think that's probably one of the reasons he don't have to worry about what everybody going to say because he already has a camp and that matters.
Yeah. And also he's independent. A lot of people look at like the money Floyd's made and we don't look at his story and how he bought himself out of the contract that he was in. That was probably with the Jewish guy. So Bob Arum owned it at one point in time, owned the contract, and he was like, no, I'm going to buy the name to Floyd Mayweather. I'm going to just go ahead and promote myself. And so he bought himself out of the contract. I think it might have cost either $75,000 or $750K, but the 75 number kind of sounds about right. And from there, he's blown up. But I'm pretty sure he's if he's not a billionaire, he's damn close, but he did it under his own terms. He did it by promoting himself. And so I think that that is the true revolution that needs to happen where Kyrie, Nike says, we don't want to deal with you. But like Nike, like I'm the talent. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't do anything but put shoes on me. Like if there's no me, there's no hot sneaker. Mm-hmm. And so therefore the sneakers that I decide to put on next are going to be the hottest sneaker. It's not what Nike, like that's just the thing.
And not just put on next, make next.
That's
go to the manufacturer and make the shoe. And that's why I love black creators. Because when I'm on Twitter, I see people just in their creative mode. And a lot of the time, as quiet as it's kept, 10 times better what I see in retail or in more prominent spaces. Mm-hmm. The people who I see on social media are so freaking talented. And then you want to go to Nike. It's like.
Yeah. I would say that that's what's interesting. And I think that I think where Kanye wants to go too, because prior to Adidas, I don't in sourcing like the whole Ye company, I don't think he had all those connections with the manufacturers and going direct to the source and all that stuff. And so now he does. And so I think he got to a point where he's like, I really don't need Adidas. They're just kind of getting in the way.
Yeah.
And they're taking half the money, if not more than half the money.
And it's so much potential for an entire revolution to happen around that. You see, like, the music industry, it's like, why are they even there?
Yeah.
What's their point? And it's like, you have access to YouTube, you have access to so many different platforms where you can literally pay to monetize yourself, mm-hmm. to promote yourself. And, you know, the only point that I'm really trying to make is that a lot of the power is moving to the people. And the only thing that has us being beholden to these big companies is just the imaginary mindset chain that they have on you, mm-hmm. thinking that that's where you have to go.
Yeah, it's true, because, I mean, even with the things that we do, back in the day, if you wanted to release a book, you had to get a book right. to publish for you. Back in the day, if you wanted to get on something like this, you had to go and get on radio.
Mm-hmm.
You had to knock on the doors and say, like, hey, I need to get on the radio, I need to get seen. Or if you wanted to, like, create a product, you had to find some platform that would, like bring you in and do all these things. And now we have the ability to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does close the gap. But what's interesting that you said about black creatives is I think black people created the term canceled. Like, now canceled is very widespread, but I think black folks created that.
I'm not a canceler. I'm from Chicago. Yeah. I believe that people should be able to say what they want. And if I don't like it, I'm going to deal with it myself.
Yeah.
I don't need a whole big mob.
Yeah.
If I want to handle it, then I can handle it. If you're in my presence and you say something that I don't like, I'm going to make sure you know that you said something that I don't like.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go on Twitter and then tell everybody that they need to gang up on you because you said something that I don't like.
I think cancel culture is toxic.
It's very toxic, but it's us silencing us. It's so problematic, but people aren't going to realize that until it's too late. And that's why, you know, that's why people don't know this, but that's why when the whole Will Smith and
Chris Rock
thing happened, that's why I was like, you know, you have to stand on what you say. I didn't see a big deal with it because I'm like, Chris Rock said something. Will Smith didn't like it. Will Smith handled it. There's going to be consequences, and that's exactly how it should be. And in the story. And so that's why I didn't think that it was a big deal to go canceling him.
They tried to cancel Will Smith? I didn't even see that. I wouldn't doubt it.
I mean, you know, he's banned from the Academy Awards. Everybody was saying how ashamed he should be. And it's like, you know, he can own his decision
yeah.
to do that. He can say that he made a mistake. Chris Rock can deal how he wants to deal with it. And that's the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But who we need to cancel is the politicians who don't do what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they have us focusing that energy on ourselves and on each other, on somebody who was in a movie. And it's like, focus that energy on your politician who ran on this and then didn't do it when they got in office because they don't care about you because they already know that you're not going to hold them accountable. We're holding the wrong people accountable.
And honestly, I'm kind of over politics. The election is tomorrow. And in order for me to vote, I got to go back home, but I will be back home. But I don't even think I'm really in a rush to really vote. It's going to sound crazy, but like so I've been hanging out with my grandma because that's where I'm staying as I'm here. And like, I hear a lot of the comments that she makes and a lot of them are just like, man, like, I don't think we should think like that. Just based on like black people not having any money and black people can't have things and, oh, that's white people stuff. And I was like, this isn't how we think in California. In California, I never thought nothing was white people's stuff. I just thought it was rich people's stuff, and I had to get rich. And so, mm-hmm. you know, here we are now. But what I think is interesting is, like, in all their yards, they are all, like, promoting different politicians. And I feel like, to a certain extent, a lot of people are expecting, like, Stacey Abrams to solve all their problems. And I'm not even familiar with Stacey Abrams. If she wins, she wins. But I just think that it's kind of an interesting culture where we're always – it kind of – creates what you said, where now we have one leader and we're all waiting on Stacey Abrams to be the savior to solve whatever problems we think we have, And we end up getting the Obama effect, where we put all this effort into something, we get disappointed. I love Obama. I voted for him 2 terms, but it ain't work out how we thought it was going to work out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm starting to realize, like, politics kind of overrated, man. Business is probably more powerful than politics.
You know what? When to say politics is overrated, to me, is to identify our own shortcoming. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like, I don't think that politics is overrated. I think that I'm not active enough. But here's my thought, okay? I can't do everything. Mm-hmm. I staked my claim in the financial industry mm-hmm. because I want to help people build wealth. I need some of y'all to stake y'all claim in politics and really get this popping at, you know, in the same way that you can see the financial community online. I want to see more, and you can see the impact that it's had on the community too. Mm-hmm. You can see everywhere you go, you'll hear people talking about, you know, my brother, he has a car that's on Turo because of what he's seen on social media, right? He is in options because of what he's seen on social media. And I want to see people who are going to their town hall meeting because of what they've seen on social media. Yeah. I want them, you know, knocking on their representative's door, you know, not their home, but their office door, and sitting down with their community and holding people accountable because they know what to do and they know where to go. Mm-hmm. We can't do everything, but we have to have people who are doing those things, the people who are in the politics, the people who are in policy, the people who are in social work. Mm-hmm. We all have to play our part.
But it's a multifaceted approach. It's not only politics, and it's not only business, because in a lot of ways, business is controlled by politics. And so I would say that when I say business or politics is overrated, it's like, well, what else are we doing?
Yeah.
What else are we building? Because, I mean, just like you said, you staked your claim in the financial world. Like, somebody needs to build a grocery store. Somebody needs to build more schools. Somebody needs to build a hospital. Like, I think that that's where the focus can and should be. And if we do that, we really would kind of make politics irrelevant. I think other cultures, they don't care. Like, they might have a few people who spring up and they just are so ambitious. Maybe they went to law school and they just want to fulfill their political dreams. But most communities aren't like, man, we got to get this guy in the office. That'll solve all their problems.
Well, you know, I don't think it is. I don't think that politics is going to be irrelevant, because those are the people who are legislating on the issues that are going to impact our lives and impact our businesses.
Kind of.
I mean, not kind of. Whether or not I can get an abortion when I go to one city versus one state versus another, that's a real issue for me, right? Like, that's not, and that's something that, you know, politicians get to determine.
But, so I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
And what you want to say?
What I want to say is that I don't think that you'll have... Next topic,
say,
please.
No,
because
say what, like, you want to say.
I feel like you as a person are more than likely positioning yourself where at this age that's not that big of an issue.
Oh, if you mean personally,
right?
Then maybe not.
Right.
However, as a woman, I don't just think about me. I think about my sisters. I think about, you know, women all over. Mm-hmm. And I'm just using abortion as an example of how people who are in positions of power get to make decisions at a political level that impact us, mm-hmm. right? Our taxes.
But my thing is, if we're talking about abortion, let's just hypothetically say that abortions are banned. Do you think that we could actually be teaching our nieces and our daughters to make better decisions or make good decisions in the circumstances they put themselves in, and to maybe dress a little bit differently, and to maybe, like, not be out there talking to the thug on the street because it's fun? Like, maybe by eliminating that function, we actually create a healthier community that's more wholesome, as opposed to just putting a Band-Aid on mistakes.
This is so interesting. And I think you're lucky you're having this conversation with me instead of somebody who's more hot-headed, because I think that in terms of, so first and foremost, I want to say that I think that as a country, we're really failing. And as a community and family units, we're really failing at how we teach sex education, and not just sex education. When we think about the relationship between men and women, it shouldn't just be about sex education. Mm-hmm. It should be about communication, period.
For sure.
Being relational with a man and a woman, period. Being in a relationship with somebody of the opposite sex is not something that you just pop out the womb knowing, and it's not just something that you learn from osmosis. Mm-hmm. Men and women are very different and have different operating systems, and we need to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that there's a failing in how we approach that, and that we should do a better job mm-hmm. at tackling those things. And I would say that in your comment, one of the things that is missed is not how we teach our daughters, but how we teach our daughters and our sons 100%. To, you know, engage in sex and mm-hmm. relationships with each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, absolutely. And I think that that needs to be looked at and changed as well, because I think that that culture is unhealthy.
But what I really think we should focus on with our young boys is teaching them that there isn't a way that a woman can dress that would make her, you know, more susceptible to sexual mistreatment or even getting pregnant. You know, people who wore pants today are having sex all day. Mm-hmm. You know, people who dressed modestly, they're having sex today.
But would you entertain an idea that it's actually that there is, and I wouldn't say mistreatment, but would you entertain the idea that the way a woman dresses or does not dress can determine the kind of attention that she gets?
Can I say what I want to say?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm a woman who, I don't wear a bra a lot. Most of the time, I walk around braless. Mm-hmm. Does that impact the type of attention I get?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that is something that I can be responsible for. Mm-hmm. And when I walk out my house, that I understand that men are going to look. Is that something that I want? No, I just want to be free. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to be, you know, wearing whatever. Exactly. I just want to be wearing whatever I want to wear. But I also live in a society, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't pretend that I don't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have to take that into consideration. Now, as a man, I understand that you're going to look, and there's a way to be respectful, and there's a way for you to be accountable mm-hmm. to yourself mm-hmm. for how you engage with me and how you make me feel. The first look is free. I got you. Like, no problem. Like, you're gonna look. And it only becomes a problem and really sketchy when you stare or when you follow me or when you, you know, that type of thing.
And so I think that that's where it comes in, where you have to also teach men. Because I don't want men to be running around here being reckless too, because they don't understand that it impacts all men.
And they're gonna do that regardless of what I wear too.
Right.
But what I wear does impact it. But it doesn't matter what I wear, the attention is gonna come. So mm-hmm. I think it's important that, you know, a man can walk around shirtless and with no pants on, and he can feel comfortable that mm-hmm. a woman is not, I don't mean like, I'm just saying that they don't have to fear violence, or they don't have fear, you know, I'm not going to disrespect somebody because they're underdressed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't prompt me to feel like I should do anything to
you. And so I think that, like you said before, in terms of like the abortion topic and the relationship topic, like it goes back and forth. It's like men need to be taught and then women need to be taught. And I think that like as a culture, that's kind of the way we're supposed to be doing anyway. You don't just raise you don't just raise your daughter and ignore your son, or just raise your son and ignore your daughter. You got to raise them both.
And that there's just so much love and companionship available at mm-hmm. that junction.
Yeah.
You know, where you are so expecting there to be some type of symbiosis or like partnership. Synergy. Yeah. In relationships with men and women.
Yeah.
And there's places to be responsible and accountable on both sides. But where I think that men should be responsible for is understanding that, you know, yes, we both have to be responsible, but we also have to acknowledge that men are simply stronger than women. And that plays a huge part in how that relationship dynamic goes.
Mm-hmm. So, man, I want to talk about business. I think this happened before.
I don't think so.
We were here talking about abortion. Wow. What are your thoughts on the politics of Atlanta currently? One thing I like about Atlanta, and one thing I like about Georgia, and this is crazy, I was having this thought, is I like that there's like this, there's this balance where you have, it's a conservative state, but it's a liberal city. And I sometimes wonder if that balance will get thrown off if you have a liberal state and a liberal city. You might end up with California, and California sucks. L.A. sucks.
Why?
You wonder why L.A. sucks? Because L.A. is more racist than southern states. You'll experience, and it's not, it's a different kind of racism. It's not like redneck racism.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's racism that I think is based off of the things that they're fed. So redneck racism, you can overcome. Because redneck racism is like, you're black and I don't like you. California racism is like, you're a thug and you're going to potentially rob me, so I don't like you. You're a thug, you're going to potentially rob me because you're black and I don't like you. And I think that's the difference. Mm-hmm. Because I can overcome, you're black, so I don't like you, because it's like, well, I'm doing all this, doing this, this, and this. And plus, it doesn't matter if you like me or not. But in a liberal area, they label you as all these different things. And so it's one thing to be black. It's another thing to be a thug and a drug dealer and all these different things. And in liberal states, you get labeled those because they don't want to make it about race.
Mm-hmm.
Because liberals are supposed to be all inclusive. We're not racist, but you're going to rob me. It's not because you're black. It's because
you're
black.
A thug.
Exactly. And so that's kind of what scares me, because California is a liberal state with a liberal city. And L.A. sucks. There's not a lot of black people living in L.A. anymore. Like, I think the black population mm-hmm. of California is like 5%. And the reason being is because it ain't sweet. People think it's sweet, but it's really not. I'd rather you dislike me just based off of race, and then I can go out and do dope things, than for you to label me and I can never get away from that label.
I'm thinking about your question, you know, how do I feel about the politics in Atlanta? And then thinking about, you know, my experience of racism here. And the truth is, I really don't care. Like, that's really the truth. Like, I walk around like everybody loves me.
Mm.
And that's my experience of people.
But it's different in Atlanta. You can do that in Atlanta.
Everywhere I go, but I agree that
Atlanta is different.
In LA, that there are not a lot of black people. When I went, I was just like trying to figure out the black spots, and they were like,
"It ain't safe." No. The black spots in Los Angeles,
like,
you don't want to go to.
Like, no, I was like, "Oh, okay." Yeah. And really, when I say I've staked my claim in the financial industry, that's really what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That is what my life is about.
Like, don't ask me no questions about politics, fam.
It's not even, you can ask me. I just don't care. You know, and it's, I used to work in politics. Mm-hmm. I used to work in a nonprofit organization, and I used to do advocacy for one of the biggest advocacy groups in D.C. So I worked on Capitol Hill for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I realized that I actively didn't like what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, D.C. is very liberal.
I love D.C., but I didn't like the politics because I saw things like filibustering, right? And I see things where it's like, this is not about the issue.
Yeah.
It's not about the issue at all.
It's about their jobs.
Exactly. And it's about money a lot of the time. Like, until we can really deal with how these groups really are paying their way in a very honest way. And politics is just like, honestly, when you look, it's silly. You can't be a president. It's not based on your merit. It's based on whether or not you have the backing to run. And that doesn't sound like democracy to me.
It doesn't sound like democracy at all.
So I'm not the person to fix that problem. And if somebody else is the person to fix that problem, I want to throw my hat in with their leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I'm focusing on helping people achieve financial freedom.
I like it. I want to circle back to the budgeting, because I think that was very, very powerful. Any tips that you have for people who want to budget the right way?
So first and foremost, I say start with my budget style quiz.
Where can they find that?
They can find it at www.gottastate.com/quiz. And it's like 15 questions, and it's going to give you your whole life. I have people texting me like, first of all, how do you know this about me? You're going to read it, and it's going to just like read you your rights. There are four different budget styles. There is the ambitious budgeter, and this is somebody who, if like, they might not got it, but they going to make it work. They going to figure out a way to make it work regardless. The fierce budgeter, this is somebody who is willing to sacrifice for what they want. Then we have the meticulous budgeter. This is your know-it-all friend. And, you know, they've read all the books and they've looked up all the things and, like, they've came up with a budget. And then you have the indulgent budgeter. This is going to be the person who's like, I want to live in luxury and I deserve to live my best life and I worked hard for this. So once you identify your budget style, then you're going to have a better idea of how to approach your budget. If you're an indulgent budgeter, then you might want to have a budget and say, like, once I stick to this for 30 days, this is going to be my reward, mm-hmm. right? You might want to have yourself on a reward system. If you are an ambitious budgeter, you're going to have to hide your money from yourself because ambitious budgeters are very good at struggling. They already know that if they spend a check, they're going to get it right back. And spend a check, and they're going to get it right back. You have to hide your money from yourself so that you're not tempted to spend it because you're not worried enough about what the future is going to entail. So based on your budget style, the way that you approach budgeting is going to be different. And there is no one style fits all. I think that that model is outdated. And I think it's the reason why budgeting has been around since forever and still nobody can really do it.
Yeah, it's like dieting.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's like there's something else at work here that we need to figure out. And that's what I'm on a mission to do, because I can help people, you know, save their money, invest their money and all that stuff. But I can't help them hit six figures like I really want to if they're not a master of their budget. So I am an advocate for budget mastery, self-mastery. And, you know, once you get control of your budget, you're going to start to get control of your life. And you can't really do one without the other.
Yeah. Last question I'll ask you is, how are you finding success in 2022? Because everybody's crying out recession. Mm-hmm. But you're still plugging along, self-employed, entrepreneur.
I don't be worried about nothing. I don't be worried about it. First of all, I'm from the south side of Chicago. When I say that I literally had to create wealth from scratch, you think a recession bothers me? My whole life was a recession. And people are so funny. I'm like, y'all didn't grow up in poverty for real. Y'all don't know poverty for real, for real. Y'all like talking like Drake, like you made it from the bottom, started from the bottom. No, you didn't start from the bottom for real. So for me, it's like, I know how to, you know, make a dollar out of 15 cents. So places where I have been comfortable, I just tighten back up. Because mm-hmm. I have made a lot of money and I'm not giving it away.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, you know, it's very easy and subtle to reclaim money from somebody. Mm-hmm. Right? They let you make all this money and then when the prices drive it up, they just snatch it back. Don't let them snatch their money back from you or your money back from you just because the price is high. So when I walk in the store, I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. If I don't need it, I'm not buying it. And you have to understand that when inflation is high, if you are a consumer, you are going to be a loser in this type of environment. You want to be a producer and an investor. That's it. You want to consume as little as possible. So yeah. That's what I be out here doing.
And I would say what's interesting about, quote, recessions is, like, different classes of people experience recessions differently.
Because we gonna run it up.
But I would also say, like, where you said you gotta have to, like, tighten up in a little bit. It's like, if you're somebody who might have been flying first class, you might not be flying first class anymore, but you're not gonna stop flying.
Right.
If you're somebody who was, you know, staying in different hotels and staying at the Ultimate Hotel, you might just have to stay at the Marriott instead of staying at the Ritz, but you're not going to stop traveling and doing certain things. And so the world doesn't necessarily stop. And I think people are expecting the world to stop. They're expecting people to quit and to give up instead of just saying, now we're going to adjust temporarily. But in the meantime, we're definitely retooling and definitely putting things back out to the market to continue to run it up and to continue to be producers in mm-hmm. this space so we can take advantage of this opportunity, because it is an opportunity, as opposed to just like laying down, waiting, and just putting our head under a rock during
the Isn't that so annoying? Don't you get annoyed with people who act like that? It's like, stop crying.
Yeah.
Please stop complaining, because some of us are out here winning.
It's always
regardless.
They complain too. I was like, if they're not talking about COVID, they're talking about a recession, they're talking about anything.
They love to be miserable. And I just like, you know, sometimes I have a lot of grace for that. In this particular season, I don't. Sometimes I do. Sometimes, because people who are in different mindset spaces, they need somebody who is going to be able to, you know, understand and uplift them. And that's just not me in this particular season. Mm-hmm. Right now, because I've been doing that for a long time. You know, I'd be nice. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, all right, baby, like, I've helped you, I've supported you, I've educated you, and now we need to get this going. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, people get stuck in a cycle of being a victim, and they want to be coddled forever. And it's like, we're not doing this. Yeah. You either going to move on, or I'm going to leave you right where you are.
Mm-hmm. The girl speaking facts. This is the energy I told you she was going to bring. Oh, man.
We didn't even get to talk about a lot of business stuff, but it was fun.
We didn't. But we did get some value.
Nobody better not cuss me out because of this podcast, but if they Charles.
You can always introduce them to your funnel and your products.
I know, because they be cussing you out sometimes.
I don't see it. They be on mute. I got the whole time on mute. I just go in there to drop my own gems and I'd be out. Where can they find you? Where can they follow you? Where can they support what you have going on?
You guys can follow me at My Goddess Stay on Twitter and Instagram. Oh, no. That's not true. It's at Goddess Stay HQ. Okay?
That's the right.
So at Goddess Stay HQ. That's where you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. My website is www.godeste.com. That's www.godeste.com. You'll find my quiz over there. You'll find all my stuff over there.
Yeah. Another amazing episode. This is episode probably number 4 or 5 with me and Tasha. And it just gets better and better each time. We get more comfortable, you know, and we had a really interesting conversation. And a lot of really good, intricate points were made.
And very respectfully, too. And I wish more people could just have conversations that might not be in agreement, right, but still very respectfully.
Yeah, because I know you wanted to, like, jump across the table and say, nah.
I really, like, calmed my spirit down.
Thank you. It's all love, though.
Like, I know.
Real, like, I think that's the most important thing is people don't realize that you can disagree in love. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you because I think your opinion sucks and I think you're a bad person. It's like, no, maybe there's a way that I look at it that you might not look
at
it. I want to share that with you.
I agree with that so hard. And I also think you have to be willing to come in and see, like, okay, am I willing to change my perspective? Because otherwise, what's the point of even talking to somebody? Like, right. I'm really willing to hear you out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Charles Oglesby, top millionaire. You can find out my information in the show notes. You can find out her information in the show notes.
They better be there.
And make sure you take that budget quiz, because I never even heard of that, but it sounds really cool. And we shift in the culture. One creative idea at a time. That's a creative idea. We out. All right.